numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning, too. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All proudly brought to you by BetMGM, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the Izzy. How you doing, Kelly? Good morning, sir.
Doing well. How you doing?
Well, you know, still jet-lagged after 8 days.
Yeah, you are. Jeez.
I am worried that this is a permanent situation, a permanent condition. Slept 5 hours in the day yesterday, nothing last night. Zero.
I was really impressed when you told me you watched the U.S. soccer game last night.
Every second of it.
I was like, wow, look at that dedication from Gil. Way to go.
What was more entertaining than the game itself is waiting and anticipating. Because you know my feeling about soccer analysis. Waiting for the very simplistic soccer analysis of if we're tied or losing against the team, we being the United States, losing against the team that we're favored against, Alexei Lalas and company go all out destroying them. And as soon as they go up a goal, the tactics have changed. They're more passion. Like, I find that the analysis so simplistic. I don't know if last night's was simplistic or not, but a draw against Portugal and the United States just barely slides in out of the group stage into the round of 16, and they have to actually overcome a strike that hit the post in added time to survive. Because if that goes in, we done.
Yep.
ESPN Stats and Info, the United States has been in its least dominant form at the Women's World Cup in over a decade, scoring its fewest goals, 4, in a group stage since 2011. This was also the first time the Americans did not win their group since that 2011 World Cup in Germany. The U.S. did, however, score multiple goals in each knockout stage match and make the final that year. Well, we will see if that's the case. I think the most interesting thing about that game, though, is, by the way, 0-0 draw last night against Portugal. The most interesting thing was Carly Lloyd just going off on them afterwards. Lalas sort of didn't lead the charge. I mean, he had things to say, too. But she insinuated that, like, winning wasn't the thing that mattered most to these girls, to these ladies. And she even, I think what the more poignant quote on this, or the more direct quote anyway, was she was talking about how, you know, to be dancing and smiling, she was disapproving of that. After the draw.
It was odd. I mean, coming from Carly Lloyd, I think it's a little bit, it's different, and I think she's very much entitled to her opinions on that matter with everything she's done with that national team. When I first saw that post-game stuff, it did strike me as a little odd, but so much of it was for the fans and stuff, you know, taking pictures with fans.
Well, and I just think a little of that is like old school mentality. Like, that's just what you say if you were back in the day. You know, these kids today, they don't care as much, kind of thing.
Right.
A little bit of that.
But then there's so much, of course, there's like so much overreaction on Twitter. Like, it is.
Soccer Twitter.
Whenever the Olympics or World Cup roll around, like, I love them and I love America. Love me some America, yo, okay?
You're big on America.
Big on America, okay? But like, we all turn into soccer experts, and then we all turn into experts on how these women should act.
Yes.
And it's like, what we, U.S. has to dominate U.S. women's soccer every time, or else it's an abject failure. And the men, we don't care about, because whatever.
Well, the men, we do the same thing, right? If we win a game in the World Cup, we go crazy.
We throw a parade for them.
That's right. But this, I just want to throw this out there as someone who does not know soccer nearly as well as Alexei Lalas or Carly Lloyd, but is interested in the fact that the analysis seems to be very simple every time, not just from them, but from soccer, you know, in general about the United States national team. Which is, maybe they are actually trying as hard as you would want them to, and it's not a matter of passion. Maybe they ain't just that good.
Oh, I kind of think it's some of that, Gil. Yeah. You want to hear your updated outright odds after this morning?
Yeah.
America plummeting. England plus 350, Spain plus 400, USA plus 450 now, Germany plus 850, Japan 9-1.
I still have that Germany plus 850, which I jumped in on with Tim Lawson. That has not gotten any shorter than it was pre-flop at all. So the USA is going to end up playing Sweden, barring just the unforeseen. It's going to be Sweden in the round of 16, and that'll be an interesting line. By the way, congratulations to everybody who had the draw last night at north of $5.
Whew.
Yeah, man.
Nice payday.
They were saying that I don't know if this was corroborated by the numbers, but the mainstream announcers were saying on the broadcast it would have been the biggest upset in the history of the Women's World Cup. I'm not sure if that's the case. But anyway, that's what they were saying. If that, by the way, it's a half inch difference between that ball going in and not, like caroming in.
Yeah.
Oh, and like our discussions on about SOGs with our hockey experts, not a shot on goal, Kelly.
So it is. So this is where you said you think this team might just be not be that good.
Yeah.
That game against the Netherlands, and Paul Carr talked about this when he was all with us, and because this is what I always, I am the jabroni watching soccer that every time it's like they get the ball, it's like, shoot it, do what are you doing, just shoot it. I felt like the U.S. played that game against the Netherlands, and I'm like, this is why I shouldn't have any say on soccer, because how many times do they shoot the ball, and it was like, and it's 20 yards over the goal. Like,
that's awesome. I love watching with you. Shoot it!
I mean, that's me with soccer and hockey. It's like, you got the puck, shoot it! What are you waiting for?
Well, in hockey, I totally agree with you, because every goal is off of a carom, right? Off something that the goalkeeper,
right.
Goaltender, pardon me, can't
soccer,
react
to. Soccer, I just don't have the patience for it.
Like
it always requires three cute little passes within like 18 yards for them to have an easy goal. I'm like, just shoot it.
Anyway, that's where we are with the U.S. team, and we'll find out Drew Dinsick, because he's been betting this too. We'll find out what he's been doing along the line. Maybe he had the draw for all we know. I don't know. What does he think moving forward in the U.S. Not the U.S., but the Women's World Cup pertaining to the U.S. specifically in this case, as we are still in the third round, or the third leg rather, of the group stage here moving forward tonight. Okay. The College Football Guide is out Thursday. It is College Football Week here on the show. We're going to talk to Pete Futak later about, you know, with Pete, you go Power 5 because he's a Power 5 snob. So we're going a little Big 12, a little Pac 12 real quick with him, a little Heisman talk while we have Pete Futak, the publisher of collegefootballnews.com, on later on the show. Todd Wishnev will join us to talk in-game college betting. This is the gold, y'all. This is the thing. Now, we have to fill hours of content talking preflop because, well, that's when we're on the air. But really, the money is made in-game. He does it in college basketball oh so well. He also does it in college football. We'll talk to Wishnev about that as well. But I wanted to start with our guide, which is coming out Thursday. I did this when you were gone, Kelly, the week that the Pro Football Guide came out. And it wasn't a Wyatt Tomchek day. It happened to be a Brian Ortega day. The Brian Ortega day. So basically that day with Ortega was a segment of Pro Football and seven segments of the Oscars, if I recall correctly.
Oppenheimer, something box like office
that.
Numbers.
Something like that. Yeah. But what I went through was the NFL guide. We have at the beginning of our guides a grid. In the case of the NFL, it was 20 experts, right, if you want to call us experts, quote unquote. It wasn't just VEASAN hosts, but like Ross Tucker was in there and others. And I just sort of went through the consensus of, and I, you know, whatever Ortega could guess, I would reveal. Whatever he couldn't, I didn't, because I wanted people to get the guide. But in that case, what we found out, among others, and I can speak about the NFL guide now that it's been out this long, but, you know, the number of divisions in the NFL where all four teams were picked by at least, you know, one person, zero. Nobody had all, you know, there were not four teams represented to win any division. Three, right? We had three among the 20.
Gotcha.
But we didn't get through four. And three teams were mentioned just one time. We were picking not only division winners, but wild card teams. And he correctly guessed, Ortega did the time, that the Steelers were one of those. Somebody had the Steelers as a wild card. Someone had the Broncos as a wild card, and Sean King had the Commanders as the NFC's champs.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we didn't reveal that at the time, but if you have the guide, that's what that shows. But anyway, the grid gives a good taste of what the guide's about. For instance, four different teams were picked to win the Super Bowl. So the College Football Guide is out. Most consensus conference champion. We did conferences. We did the four-team playoff, the final four-team playoff. We did the national championship and the championship game itself. The most we had 18 experts. The most consensus conference champion, 16 of 18, picked this team, this school, as the champion in this conference. Any guesses what conference it would be? You'll never get this, Kelly.
Western Kentucky and Conference USA.
No.
Crap.
Should I give it away, or should I let people buy the guide? I'll give this one away, yes?
Give that one away. Yeah, they got to get everything else in the guide.
Surprisingly, Boise State to win the Mountain West.
Wow.
16 of 18. 16 of 18. That's kind of shocking when I want to say Air Force and Fresno State have higher season win totals as well.
Was Jonathan Von Tobel one of the 16? I think he was talking up some of the other teams.
Oh, now you got me scrambling.
Sorry.
Was Jonathan Von Tobel?
I don't even know if he's on the grid.
Kelly's never done this show before. He's not aware of the time limit that we have here. Okay, I'll check. Hey, take my time.
Never mind. We can circle back.
Let's see. I wasn't going to name any names or anything, but let's see. JVT did not have Boise State. One of the two.
That's what I think he was when we were discussing some of the Group of Five conferences with him while you were out. And yeah, he was talking about how he thought there was some value on some of those other teams. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think was the conference that had the most different teams picked?
Oh, that's a great one. Let's go. This is great radio. Sorry.
Great radio.
Pac-12.
No.
No.
That would be the Sun Belt. Yes. There you go.
I just found the one with the longest odds.
Yeah, the Sun Belt, which has 14 teams, but five different teams were picked by the 18 experts to win the Sun Belt. There were a few others that had four different teams picked, but the Sun Belt had five different teams picked. So Mountain West, the most consensus, Sun Belt, the least consensus.
Man, what are these conferences going to look like here in a couple years? This is incredible.
Oh, dude. I mean, it's the last year of the Pac-12 as you know it. It's the last year of the Big 12 as you know it.
Well, and even like we were, you know, again, JVT and I were talking about some of those Group of Five conferences, and it's like everybody good in Conference USA moved to the AAC. Like these smaller conferences just got to disappear at some point.
Honestly, it's gotten to the point with college basketball, I couldn't keep up anymore. And I still think Maryland's an ACC team after all these years. I'm like, wait, oh, that's right. You know, the team you grew up on.
Now you get Colorado bouncing back and forth. That's just going to confuse us more.
Colorado. What was your favorite moment of the Colorado years in the Pac-12?
What, they have like one winning season?
I'll give a few more of these from the grid in our college football guide on the other side. And Drew Dinsick joins us as well to talk all things sports, NFL, maybe some tennis. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. You know the new graphics we have there, the new shots of us? There's one of them where I'm like swaying back and forth like I have to desperately go to the restroom.
I've also realized that for whatever reason, me and you decided to wear like the exact same thing.
Eggplant.
Yeah, we're both wearing like eggplant with blue coats.
Before we get to Drew here, Drew Dinsick kind enough to join us. So let me just do a couple more of these from our college football betting guide, which comes out on Thursday. So 18 people in this, 18 experts in the grid that starts it all off. And it's not just the grid, by the way. The grid is just as Flatter would say, whet your appetite. 17 of 18 had this school in the 4-team playoff. You can probably guess what that is.
Florida State.
No, that would be Georgia, you homer. But Florida State, I will say this. Florida State, there are four different teams, and I'll only give away the one. There are four different teams that are only mentioned twice among the 18 experts to make the playoffs. Just twice were they brought up, and Florida State is one of those four teams.
Wow, haters.
I would be one of them.
There you go. Looking out.
I'm your boy.
You're looking out.
Nobody had Bama in the national championship game. They didn't even get to the – nobody. Zero out of 18 had Bama in the national championship. There were two schools that were mentioned, one in the national championship. Can you name one of them now that you know what I just said for the playoff?
Georgia.
Florida State. Are you paying attention? Jeez. And then 14 of 18 had this school, well, Georgia in the national championship, and eight, I won't mention any of them, but eight different teams out of 18 to win the national title. Eight different teams were picked to win the national title.
Wow, okay.
Yep. How about that?
Going deep down the board. Let's go.
Yeah. I don't know if FSU was not one of them, Kelly. Sorry about your alma mater. Apologize.
Yeah, it's okay.
Drew Dinsick joins us, ladies and gentlemen. College football might be the only sport he doesn't handicap. He joins us from both the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with his buddy Andy Molitor, Dinsick Classic, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. How you doing, Drew?
I'm great. Anyone of your experts, which of the experts had TCU last year, and who did they like this year?
Oh, great question. The answer to which I don't know.
I can't imagine anyone at TCU last year. That was a little wild.
No, nobody pre-flop had TCU. I don't believe. I don't want to. If somebody did, good for them.
I'll see if I can find.
I had Duggan 100-1, but that was mid-season to win the Heisman. But no one had TCU. And I think other people had TCU mid-season, but not pre-flop. Yeah. There are some obscure ones among that group, though. Obscure, I don't know about obscure, but obscure, you know, put in perspective. A couple teams from, or at least one team from the Pac-12, that you might not expect, and a team from the Big Ten that you might not expect. So anyway, but the reason you don't do college football is just a timing thing, right? Like you just don't have the time.
Oh yeah, back when I was a losing player, I would spend 90% of my week thinking about the NFL. Handicapping the NFL, and then on Friday night before Saturday morning, I would donk away on the most popular college football games that I was just kind of interested in watching. And it turns out that's a losing strategy. betting into the most efficient of the college games at the worst possible time is a great way to give back any edge at all you have in any other sport you're handicapping. So I stopped betting college altogether. Nowadays, I do hit some information-based stuff. I have a couple of friends who are really, really outstanding college football originators who are kind enough to share their most favorite looks before they completely nuke the board. So I bet it here and there, but I definitely am not originating anything college.
Drew sounds like he might have participated in a late night Tommy Chang University of Hawaii wager.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to.
Oh, yeah. Tommy Chang was a legend.
Just a guess. Okay. Yeah. NFL, though, you're all about it. And let me just ask you, because I know last week when we talked, you're like, I haven't really made that many new NFL bets. I'm just curious about any of the latest news. Maybe it was the Jonathan Taylor stuff in Indianapolis. Maybe it's Sean Payton running his mouth as the coach of the Denver Broncos. Is there anything recently, maybe it's something else, that has moved the needle for you on any team or any of your thinking?
Well, the big needle mover is the Jalen Ramsey injury. That obviously stinks. I feel... Yeah, I was quietly excited about the Miami Dolphins. I hadn't played them to win anything like Super Bowl or NFC, but it was the team that I kind of couldn't get over a little bit of a disconnect between, because I don't have a huge gap between the strength of that roster and then the three teams that were market graded a tier ahead of them in the Chiefs, Bengals, and Bills. It's just that the gap was narrow. The only real knock you can put on the Dolphins is that Tua has never, he has gotten his playoff stinker out of the way. So, it was going to take a little bit of fortuitous seeding and opponents to help the Dolphins get there. But the Jalen Ramsey injury moves their defense from me from a top five unit down to a kind of middle of the pack. I think I grade their roster now 14th. It moves their DBs from top half down to 20th for me. I don't know that the Eli Apple experience is going to work the way they expect it to work, but I all of a sudden see, you're going up against some pretty incredible quarterbacks on your schedule this year if you're Miami, and going into this now without Jalen Ramsey is a pretty decent ding. So a little bit of cold water on any kind of Miami enthusiasm, although I still have them as clearly the second best team in the AFC East, and I have the Jets fourth.
You have the Jets fourth. Ooh, wait, let me circle back to that in a second. Let me get back to the Dolphins for a second, because I too have said here a few times on this show that I feel like Miami is a team that people are strangely overlooking, which I guess was my way of saying kind of what you were saying, which is, I get it, maybe they're not the Chiefs, but I feel like we have them way below the elite of the AFC. Those are more your words than mine, but I did feel we were overlooking them. The Jalen Ramsey thing is interesting because I have cited Football Outsiders' analysis of cornerbacks in the past. And one of the things that Aaron Schatz was super keen on focusing in on was how cornerbacks are a very volatile position. You can't really project from one year to the next with most of these guys. could it be that a guy, even as good as Jalen Ramsey is, that that might be a position where, you know, you can't really have counted on his production from a previous year to the next?
It's possible. I will say that I actually spent a good amount of my offseason looking at aging curves for different players and positions, just because I was curious of like how to kind of forward project who is going to come off, you know, fall off a cliff. Because there's a couple of teams who are coming into this season with some, you know, some gray beards, and you know, it's enticing to try to come up with some reason to doubt them. What I found looking at aging curves, particularly for defensive backs, year over year, is chaos. If you are, 50th percentile to 75th percentile or 25th to 75th percentile, if you're kind of in the bulk of, the players that play that position, it's chaos, which, you know, your peak year can be wildly, you know, wildly different than your average, wildly different year over year. But if you're in the upper, you know, like maybe the upper, surely the upper quartile, but even more than that, like the upper, you know, 5% of your position in terms of what your peak value is, then, number one, you're a heck of a lot flatter over the balance of your career. And number two, your career tends to be much longer. But with DBs, it has like a distinct dip, when you're in your late 20s, early 30s, where you kind of have to transition from using your speed and athleticism to kind of using your know-how and understanding of quarterbacks and wide receivers and kind of just be able to think strategically about how you're playing the position. And there's like a clear kind of bounce back for some cornerbacks who figure that out, and then others who just never get over losing the athleticism, and then just they're out of the league in a matter like faster than you could believe. And so I think with a player like Ramsey, whose peak was so high, I would expect him to continue to contribute at a really high level well longer than we would have thought. You know, I mean, there's examples of kind of guys who he matches career trajectory with, like Charles Woodson and, you know, guys who played into their late 30s. And so, yeah, expecting Ramsey to just completely dip this season was not expected. And now, you know, now you've got a pretty fragile secondary here going, you know, to be paired with what is a really, really impressive, you know, step forward in the defensive coordinator position to Vic Fangio, combined with a really young and elite pass rush. I mean, the front seven for the Miami Dolphins is amazing. So it's now all of a sudden the type of defense where I don't mind kind of laying the points with the Dolphins or, you know, looking for an under when they're going up against a team that has kind of a middling or poor O-line. But if you're going up against a good O-line and a good quarterback, then all of a sudden I'm not feeling as excited about backing the Dolphins. And that's kind of like looking right at the Chiefs, for instance.
But no futures bets for you as a result of this.
No. I think realistically it just cooled me off on one I would make.
Cornerback is a fascinating position because I remember Nnamdi Asamoah, one year they didn't throw at him at all. The next year they're like, why didn't we throw at him all year last year? You know, that kind of thing. And then you have the Daryl Greens of the world who could make it up with speed late. We'll come back. Why does he have the Jets last next?
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Tormented by the transfer portal, coaching carousel got you confused? Let our 2023 VSiN College Football Guide get you ready for the upcoming season. This year's College Football Preview magazine includes season win total picks and previews for all 133 FBS teams, plus feature articles on how to create a power ratings model, calculate home field advantage, and who to bet on for the Heisman. Get Matt Eumanns' preseason top 25, Steve Mackinnon's top betting systems, and what you need to know to be ready for kickoff. The College Football Betting Guide comes out this Thursday as one of the many benefits to becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber, so sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe, and I'll say it again, it cannot be stressed enough what a great job Eumanns, Adam Burke, what they all do for these betting guides, and the College Football Guide is second to none. Before we get back to Drew and find out why he believes the Jets are going to finish last, or at least he has them rated last in the AFC East, even behind the New England Patriots, who are the consensus last place team. Some people even have the Jets flirting with winning the division, for goodness sake. Do you remember when we were talking AFC West the other day? Not the Sean Payton thing, Kelly, but we're just going team by team. And I mentioned, I just threw out a random stat. This is very coincidental. I said during that, when I was referring to the Broncos, that since Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler arrived in the 2020 draft as first and second round picks, respectively, Jeudy Hamler, Tim Patrick, and Cortland Sutton have played in two games together over three seasons. That's two out of 50. Sutton tore the ACL in his left knee in 2020. Hamler suffered a torn left ACL and hip injury in 2021. And Patrick tore his right ACL in training camp last summer. Well, oh boy. Tim Patrick, who missed last year, as I said, with a torn right ACL, suffered a torn left Achilles during practice yesterday. Ugh. I've had a couple of those. That ain't fun. KJ Hamler announced on his Instagram account at the same time that he has been diagnosed with a, quote, mild heart irritation called pericarditis. He said he would miss some time, but intended to be back on the field this season after treatment with medication. The Broncos waived him with a non-football illness designation yesterday. Sources telling ESPN the move was made to let him undergo treatment and potentially bring him back later if he is cleared. So sometimes you just, it doesn't matter. You can have everything set up and the injuries, and for goodness sakes, for KJ Hamler, we hope he's okay with the pericarditis. Things happen, and you just, as a football team, obviously that's more serious than anything football, but as a football team, you can, you know, your best plans can be laid, and it just doesn't work out year after year after year, and that's the latest setback for the Denver Broncos. This on the heels of Sean Payton having his rant about, you know, former coach.
The training camps every year, man. It's just you forget. It's just a slew of injuries every year, and it catches you by surprise every single season.
Their wide receiving corps just decimated year after year. Drew Dzitzik rejoins us from the Bet the Edge, NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast, and of course, the Deep Dive, wherever podcasts are distributed. The Deep Dive is just a fantastic listen. Week after week, year after year, fantastic. And Andy Molitor is great as well. One of the funniest people you'll run into, Andy Molitor, as well. Very amusing. What about the Jets? Why you got them last in the AFC East?
I mean, it's a combination of two things. The first is an imbalanced roster, and the second is schedule.
That start.
Oh my God, that first six games for the Jets is the most difficult first six that I've got in my database in terms of starting the season.
You couldn't, if I said to you,
last 5 years,
if I said to you, concoct a horrible six game start.
Oh my God.
You would come up with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Home Bills, at Cowboys, home Pats, home Chiefs, at Broncos in elevation, home Eagles.
Yeah. The Bengals aren't on there.
Yeah, that's true. You could make it worse. I could replace the Patriots with the Bengals.
Four of your home games, four incredibly tough quarterbacks you have to face in that mix. It's exceptionally difficult start to the season, which obviously puts you in a little bit of a difficult spot as you're trying to integrate a new quarterback and new system. But as I look at the Jets roster, it's pretty imbalanced. Their defense to me right now grades third best in the NFL. They have the second best DB room. They have a very solid front seven, decent pass rush. They have very, very good depth with the front seven. So the defense is just in general is good, but they face one of the toughest schedules of quarterbacks of any defense in the NFL this year. So that's it kind of neutralizes your one strength, I think. And then on the flip side, your offense is, trotting out the 28th best offensive line, especially concerned about the interior of the offensive line compared with an older, less mobile quarterback. Your skill position group, I grade 25th right now. I think it's realistic to expect Aaron Rodgers to give you top 10 quarterback production, even in this, even in this swirling, underwhelming mix of players you've got. But he's paired with Nathaniel Hackett, who I have significant questions about being able to construct and run an offense effectively in today's NFL.
Speaking of which. Yeah,
I think you have to look at Rodgers as long tail to the under just because of the, offensive line he's paired with and the offensive scheming. So, I'm not to the point where I'm, as sincere and certain as Sean Payton is that Nathaniel Hackett is one of the worst coaches to ever trot on the field. But the fact is we have not seen a strong track record of him calling plays, and he is responsible for calling plays for this Jets team. In a way, against a schedule that is just extremely difficult. So,
I was going to ask it the other way, which is,
sure.
What do you see what do you like about the Patriots then by contrast or by comparison?
I just have the Patriots as a more balanced and better roster overall. They don't have the high highs, they don't have the rooms like your DB room, but they're good everywhere on defense. Overall, I grade them as eighth best defense, top five front seven, solid DB room. And just in general, you added depth with your, a pretty interesting draft choice in taking Gonzalez where you did. Nothing spectacular at all on offense, but a good interior offensive line. What has to almost certainly be one of the biggest coordinator upgrades at the offensive coordinator position, going from Matt Patricia to Bill O'Brien. So it's not saying that he's going to light the world on fire with his scheme, and he certainly doesn't have the pieces to work with in terms of wide receiver room. But, there's enough positive there that I would say overall you're just a more balanced team, and I think your starters grade out better. The weakness of the Jets at the O-line is really kind of the thing that I could see undoing that unit overall.
Yeah.
I could be coming in low on some of these guys. Surely if Mekhi Becton is healthy by the end of training camp and he's an effective piece of tackle, maybe this isn't as big a concern. I still look at that as a thin unit and a relatively weak, particularly on the interior. And, if you had a super outstanding mobile quarterback who could, gain first downs with his legs like a Jalen Hurts type of player, then maybe I'm not as worried about that. But I don't see Aaron Rodgers being able to, elude pass rush at this point. And, the state of the NFL, to me at least, you have a bunch of teams that now have really, really good interior D lines. And I think you're going to see a lot of games that are won and lost with just that specific matchup of interior D line versus O line that's not especially strong in terms of guard and center play. So that's where I worry about the Jets kind of in general being able to go score for score with some of the elite offenses on their schedule. And you worry a little bit about how the New York media handles, all the fanfare around this team being on Hard Knocks, what they gave away to get Aaron Rodgers. And then if they start out 1-5 or 2-4 or even 3-3, is that viewed as a failure?
Well, I said, you give them truth serum. They won't admit this, but if you give them a 3-3 right now, they will take it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think I would say that is their ceiling for starting out at the schedule. Yeah. And, that said, I don't know that anyone in the city is going to be especially excited about that. And then you go right into your bye and you come out against some winnable teams. But this is still just this is, one of the most difficult schedules you can find in the NFL. And it's going to be interesting the way it's sequenced with all these tough games out of the gate. Does that sour people on just in general their potential to reach any kind of potential for this team to get to double digit wins?
It'll be interesting. I said, maybe an adjusted season win total bet after these six games clear, but it's not like the bookmakers don't know that is cleared as well. Real quick, because we only have a minute left. Are you betting any tennis this week, or are you out on tennis these days?
I'm going to probably bet some DC. I haven't taken any futures yet, and kind of wanted to get a sense of what the court conditions are like. Scheduling, obviously, in DC is a little funky. And now they've added more, they've added the women's side of the tournament to it's a crowded field now. And actually, I kind of thought with the 2500 in DC that it was going to be a better
field.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to introduce you to DC mosquito filled summers, humid summers. That's probably why it's not as big as it should be. It's just a weird time of the calendar. By the way, I have Tiafo 8-1. I'm going big T 8-1. Yep.
That's a good price. Yeah. He's got his story. If you don't already know, specifically related to DC and, his introduction to the sport of tennis, with his dad as effectively what was the custodian at the junior tennis center, affording him the opportunity to learn and train as a young man. This is just a great story and, easiest tennis player to cheer for, particularly among the American, challengers.
No doubt about it. No doubt about that at all. You're not a big John Isner fan? Is that what I'm hearing? Oh, okay. Interesting.
Big John.
Just not very exciting.
not my guy.
Not very exciting is what I'm driving at. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it. Pete Futek, Power Conference is next.
Enough.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a same-game parlay wager with at least four legs on any MLB game. And if all legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back and bonus bets up to $25. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and over wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. U.S. promotional offers not available in Kansas, Mississippi, D.C., Nevada, New York, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Nevada, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, West Virginia, Virginia, and Wyoming. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY. That's Hope, New York, or text Hope, New York, 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. This offer not valid to Puerto Rico residents. Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. Let's talk some college football. Our guide is out on Thursday. This gentleman is the founder, the czar, the emperor of collegefootballnews.com, where he writes, I'm going to say, 5 bajillion articles a day on the subject of college football, a treasure trove of information. It's Peter Futak, everybody. How you doing, Pete?
Gil, how you been?
I've been great, man. Great to see you. How's your summer?
Good? Yeah. I think so. It's about over now, because you're right. It's once it turns August 1st, people actually care about this whole college football thing and a little bit more. And I'm actually in a holding pattern, because as we speak, I believe the good people of the Pac-12 are trying to decide the future of college sports as we know it. And if they can come up with the right media deal, or else if this thing's going to completely blow up in the next few years, we don't really have a Pac-12 anymore. So
yeah,
this is going to get really interesting over the next 24 to 48 hours.
I mean, isn't that the macro headline of this year, that in addition to it being the last year of the 4-team playoff, it's the last year of the Pac-12 as we know it. It's the last year of the Big 12 as we know it. It's just not going to be the same after this in so many ways.
Yeah, and the two tie together, because you're right. Next year, the expectations are all going to change, because next year, really, you have to just win your Power 5 conference and then finish in the top 11, because the 12th team is probably always going to be the Group of 5 champion. And so if you're in the Pac-12 and you care about sports, this is the business thing, not a sports thing, you want to stay around because you got a better shot at getting into the college football playoff. And we'll see where the media deal comes in. Not everyone's going to take off from the Pac-12, even if they do leave. So it's going to be an interesting time to see how this all shakes out. But we're talking peanuts here. The big stuff, and kind of you're alluding to, is after next year, when USC and UCLA are in the Big Ten and Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC.
Yes.
Then those two conferences are just, you know, what are we talking about here? Okay, so the Pac-12 loses a couple teams, whatever. Those two are still going to be the monsters.
Yes, the Big Ten and the SEC, it will be a whole different world. Let's for this final year of college football as we know it. Let's just talk about real quick. Let's try to squeeze in a whole bunch of things. We'll do rapid fire here, and let's start with the Pac-12, which you do a great job of pointing out at collegefootballnews.com just how underappreciated Lincoln Riley might be in his first 6 years of coaching. USC with the highest season win total in the Pac-12, Caleb Williams trying to have a back-to-back Heisman campaign, but they haven't beaten the Ducks since 2016, the Oregon Ducks. Haven't won in Eugene since 2011, and Oregon is probably, along with Washington, which just had just unbelievable offense with Michael Penix Jr. at the helm yesterday. Those are the two teams that are the biggest contenders. Oregon schedules, yeah, they have a tough road Pac-12 schedule. And then with Penix, you just wonder if, you know, what's the standard with him? The injuries or last year where he didn't have any? And you hope it's last year. Where do you stand on all three of these teams?
Yeah, well, first of all, the ironic part about this whole thing with the Pac-12 blowing up is it's probably top to bottom one of the most interesting conferences in the country. Is that, you know, okay, Stanford's kind of the free space this year, but Arizona's better. Cal's better. Arizona State's going to be better. Colorado's going to at least be more talented. So you have all these different teams where we're going to talk about the teams at the top, but everyone seems like they have an NFL quarterback. You know, everyone seems like they have a ton of talent back. So the thing about this is yes, USC is the star of the show here, but on the wrong day, if that defense isn't working and if Caleb Williams isn't 100%, and that's a whole discussion for another day about whether or not, you know, how long is he going to want to really be interested and hang around and play in this thing if he's got $250 million waiting for him, like all these other quarterbacks are getting. But yeah, Penix Jr., his thing is going to be, can he stay healthy? Because if he's 100%, that Washington offense works, it rocks, and they can beat just about anybody in the Pac-12 or in the country and on the schedule. Oregon is always good. It's always going to be right there, except there's always that one date in the middle of November somewhere in Arizona where they're going to just take their eye off the ball and lose. And then we haven't even talked about the one team that's still the defending champion two times. Utah is probably better than it's been. As long as Cam Rising is okay and off that knee injury, they're going to be even better than they were last year. So it is a loaded Pac-12, but USC's at the top of that heap.
Is Utah at 6-1 the best bet on the board to win the conference, given the number?
I would think so. Why not? I mean, they've proven that they can do this before. The question is just getting to the Pac-12 championship, because as we've seen with Utah and getting to the brass tacks here, Utah is fantastic at home. They lose to top teams usually when they get away from Salt Lake City. So if they can get through some of the, if they can just own own Salt Lake City and maybe win one or two key games outside of this, it's just going to be getting to the Pac-12 championship. But yeah, underappreciate Utah at your own risk, because they've proven the last 2 years that, forget all the other shiny objects. They've got the rock solid tradition they're going now.
All right, let's transition to the Big 12 for a second. Obviously, this is, Kansas State, TCU, Texas Tech, they're going to have something to say about this. But when always we talk about the Big 12, we talk about Texas and Oklahoma, who are the two short shots to win this. Texas with Quinn Ewers under center, but obviously Arch Manning waiting his turn, one would say. Malik Murphy also there, probably not even their best players, right? Xavier Worthy, the wideout's probably the best player. And then Oklahoma, who was 6-7 last year under Brent Venables, who was supposed to come there and be a defensive guru, not so much. Do you think that regresses back to normalcy this year?
A little bit. And, we just talked about the Pac-12 being even. Well, look at the top to bottom at the Big 12. Where's your free space? I mean, is Houston, is that your worst team in the Big 12 this year? Because Kansas is pretty good. West Virginia's all right. So you've got everybody in the Big 12 is good enough to beat anybody else on the right day. So Texas, is out of all these teams, we're talking who's going to get to the Big 12 championship, Texas is the best of the bunch. But as my line goes, Texas-wise, that's an 11-win team and a 9-win body. We know what happens with them. They've got all the talent in the world, but they're going to misfire on a game here and there. And to your point with Oklahoma, yeah, they should be better. The defense is going to be stronger. As long, their problem last year was more that they didn't get a consistent quarterback play when Dylan Gabriel got hurt. If he stays in one piece, that's going to be better. So Oklahoma's going to be a little bit better overall. Those are the two top teams in the conference this season. But Kansas State, they've got a lot returning from that team that actually won the Big 12 championship last year. I do think TCU falls back a little bit. And you mentioned Texas Tech, which I'm in love with. This is going to be a high-octane team. They've got a whole lot of talent there. Tyler Shug is a kind of a fringy, hidden pro, deep cuts pro prospect who might be that guy who rises up this year and is like, uh-oh, there's your first rounder. So that offense is going to blow up. So there are a whole lot of good teams in the Big 12 this year, including the new teams that are going to come in to make it even stronger. But you're right, Texas is the one team out of that bunch that should rise above the fray.
But if Utah at 6-1 is the best bet in the Pac-12, is Texas Tech, in your opinion, the best bet in the Big 12? 12-1
to win? No, because you have to get there first, and then you have to win it. So I would say probably not. I would probably say Kansas State again. As boring as that sounds, because again, they return just about everybody. They're sound on the lines. So Kansas State's a pretty good option there. And you're looking at the board right there. Oklahoma State at 40-1. I think they're undervalued overall because they don't have Spencer Sanders at quarterback this year. There are a few question marks, but it's a Mike Gundy team that has a lot of good parts returning. Their lines are going to be fine, and that offense is going to be good. So if you've got all these teams in the bunch of a pretty even bunch, 40-1 on Oklahoma State is not insane.
I'm going to have you back to talk Heisman with us because we don't have enough time to flesh it out right now. But I hesitate to ask you this in the last 45 seconds because I know, Peter, for those who aren't aware, you're the biggest Power 5 snob there is. And you're an SEC snob.
Well, even more than ever now.
Even more than ever. So dare I ask you, who do you have at the national championship, sir?
I mean, it's you have to, because there aren't any group of five teams that are going to be even in the mix. But to get into the national championship, Georgia, just assume it. Just they are by far the most talented team in the country. Their schedule is not that bad. It's getting schedule shamed, but their schedule isn't that easy. But they should roll through it enough to get to the Final Four. Michigan, Ohio State winner is definitely going to be there. I think the Michigan, Ohio State loser, as this plays out again for the second straight year, is going to get there. And to pick anybody else too wacky, you're going off the moon, I'm going to say USC is my fourth team.
Okay. All right. There's some. There's some. Yeah, obviously it's a power five in this discussion, but you tend to go to the very, very top in this discussion. And at least you got USC in there. I like it. All right, Pete, we'll do Heisman next. Okay. Next time you're on. How about that?
Absolutely.
Peter Futak, collegefootballnews.com. Check it out. You can follow him on Twitter at Pete Futak, FIUTAK. Let's talk some baseball next with Mark Borchardt, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.